tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 17th of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Yes, it's Friday. It's the end of the week, which means we have a special guest with us here today. We have Grandpa Dan, all the way from Texas. Grandpa, good day, sir. How is life treating you?
Oh, we're doing all right. We're wrapping up another fun-filled week here in Clown World. And looks like we'll have some more Clown World to cover on our Friday installment of lighthearted news on the Daily Nationalist.
It's a never-ending stream, really, of content like this. But I bet you're nice and cool over there with your fascist air conditioning. I'm sweltering hot here. We're right in the middle of a heat wave. They announced earlier this week that having air conditioning was fascist. It was white supremacist because it means that you don't care about climate change, apparently. So, yeah, so I hope you're happy over there with your fascist air conditioning over there in Texas.
It amazes me they have the nerve to talk about climate change, to bring that up. You know, these people bring it up like, you know, so you're just destroying the planet by not sweating to death with your air conditioner. And while at the same time, those same people are absolutely silent about these data centers they're building, you know, like one data center uses more electricity than an entire city. But if you have air conditioning, you know, you're somehow destroying the planet. It's all it's also disingenuous and all feeds into my I'm so over it mood that I'm in today, which ought to make this going over today's story all the more fun and entertaining for the audience.
Well, those data centers, I mean, the AI, I mean, it seems to have been a failure. They keep having to employ programmers again. I mean, it hasn't worked. I think it was you that was saying that your idea was that they were building all these data centers for this central bank digital yeah. currency. But of course, if we have a digital currency, what are we going to do about the faces that we have on the dollar bills and the pound sterling? I mean, surely they can't do that. It's very important to them, these faces that they actually have on the currency that we use. Or you would think so from today's news story, which comes from GB News. The headline is Woke Civil Servants Championed Plan to Replace Divisive Winston Churchill with LGBT and Ethnic Minorities on Banknotes. Government officials urged the Bank of England to replace Winston Churchill with LGBT plus and ethnic minority figures on British currency, according to newly emerged correspondence. The Office for Equality and Opportunity, a cabinet office division headed by Bridget Phillipson as Minister for Women and Equalities, wrote to the bank's chief cashier during last summer's consultation period. It has been revealed. And just the thing that jumps out to me straight away is how these terms that they use, they actually mean the opposite. The Office for Equality and Opportunity. What they mean there is inequality. They mean discriminating against white people, having shortlists for women and ethnic minorities, limiting the opportunities for people with a high IQ. And it is headed by Bridget Phillipson, the Minister for Women and Equalities. And it's, if we're all supposedly equal, why do we have a separate minister for women? Do we have a separate minister for men? No, we don't have a separate minister for men. And all of this comes on top of the news a couple of weeks ago that what they were doing is they were going to replace Winston Churchill with British animals. They were going to put badgers on the notes, and they were going to put hedgehogs on there. And of course, all of that was basically a cover story, because what they were really wanting to do was replace him with, I don't know, black lesbians, perhaps drag queens, something of that flavour. And I also picked this article because I know that you've had something similar happen over there, Grandpa, haven't you? They were threatening to put Harriet Tubman on a $20 note a while back. Harriet Tubman, I think she was a famous freed slave, something like that. And it's never actually happened, but I can recall seeing news stories about it over the last 10 years. Periodically, they would say they were going to put Harriet Tubman on a $20 bill. I think the last person to say that was Joe Biden. What do you make of this anyway?
It always reminds me the name of these outfits, you know. It reminds me of the silly, ridiculous names like the old Soviet Union, you know, would have, you know, the Bureau for, you know, Constitutional Upright Law, you know, in the Soviet Union, you know, the Bureau for the Preservation of the People's Democracy or something in the Soviet Union. And here we have the Office for Equality and Opportunity. It's just like the same thing. You know, they put these ridiculous names on here. I'm so shocked that it's being run by a woman. I at this point, I was sitting here. I'd read through the story, obviously, before we went on air, I skimmed through the story. And I'm like, you know what? Now, I'm at this point, replace all of them. Take Winston Churchill off, and I say, let's just go to the extreme. Just go ahead. They poured gas all over it. Let's just light a flare and toss it on, you know, put on our best Joker face and laugh while it burns. Let's just put, it's like some, let's forget historical figures altogether. Let's just put like some random Rasta man from Jamaica with a giant joint hanging out of his mouth on the money. I think it'd be funny. LGBT, let's go all the way. You know, put a scene from gay scat porn on the British pound sterling, you know, on the $20 bill or whatever. Make it, better yet, make a $3 bill, you know. Celebrate the alphabet community. Put gay scat porn on both sides of it. Why not? You know, just go ahead. Just all the way. You know, they're determined. Just go ahead. Just put random nobodies. You know, put this guy on here. Be like, who's on our bill here? Well, you know, this guy was a famous drug dealer from the 1990s. We put him on the bill. You know, it's just, who cares? And then honestly, even if we're being honest, it may be an upgrade from Winston Churchill.
Well, the thing is, the people that they put on these bills, they're historical personalities. I mean, they're people that have passed away from way back in the past, people like Isaac Newton, people like Winston Churchill. And of course, if you look back in history, there weren't very many black and minority ethnics. In fact, there were none at all before the end of World War II. Britain was 99.9% white. And there certainly weren't any historical personalities that wanted to be known as LGBT. So there simply aren't any historical personalities. So they would have to pick people from today. And by picking people from today, they're effectively admitting that this is a new phenomenon. And this is these people never existed before in the past, because if they existed in the past, they would be able to find some from the past in order to put them on the pound note. Well, civil servants argued that the high-profile Britons currently appearing on banknotes presented an incomplete picture of national identity. Historical figures can powerfully anchor public memory, but have historically reflected limited dimensions of British identity, the letter stated. What do they mean, limited dimensions of British identity? I mean, they're supposed to be Great Britons that they put on there. I mean, I can't really recall many Great Britons that happen to be black British citizens, for instance, or Muslim British citizens. I can't really actually think of any. So what do they mean, limited dimensions of British identity? In actual fact, actual British identity stems from British ethnicity. That's what your identity is. Your identity is not what country you're a citizen of. That's a completely different thing. That's a legal status, basically. It's not your actual identity. Your identity comes from your ancestry. It comes from who came before you and what your inheritance from them is. Ethnicity is the root of all identity. So there is only one British identity, and that's English, Northern Irish, Scottish, or Welsh. It's not black or minority ethnic. And in actual fact, by putting them on these notes, it's effectively saying that the country has been occupied by people that don't actually have a British identity. Officials pushed for greater representation of women, disabled people, ethnic minority communities and LGBT plus individuals, arguing that this would send a strong signal of progress and recognition. I mean, it's like in London, where you have the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who they've just actually made into a lord. And he wanted to replace the statues there with people that reflect modern London. So essentially, he wanted to replace the white people, the statues of white people, and replace them with statues of brown people, which is effectively what every conqueror does when he takes over a country. They'll take down the heroes that were there before, and they'll put their own heroes in their places. I mean, it's so in your face that our countries have become occupied by traitors and the foreigners, effectively, that these traitors have brought in. And the fact that they want to not just replace the ethnic British people with non-British people, like actual demographic people, but they also want to replace us on our pound notes, and as I say in America, on our dollar bills as well. What are your thoughts on this, Grandpa?
Well, I have to point out their silly word spells they try to cast that have no actual meaning. It would send a strong signal of progress and recognition. What does any of that mean? How are you defining progress and recognition of who? You know, disabled people. Okay, well, what disabled person who is of great note in British history has been left out? They can't name anybody. That's why I said they need to just put randos on there. Just put some rando guy on there. Nobody even knows. You just say, well, he was a well-known drug dealer, or, you know, this guy was born paralyzed. Didn't do anything of note, but here he is in his wheelchair. You know, you always have to chuckle at how they throw these things out. They use these terms, and there's no, like I say, there's no actual meaning. It's just supposed to kind of hypnotize you. But sitting here with this topic, and I'm sitting here just thinking to myself of the possibilities. You know, we just lost one of our true great American heroes. We don't have very many, and we lost this recently, one of our true great American heroes, Lindsey Graham. And I'm thinking we could put him on the, maybe he should go on the $100 bill. I know he's white, but it's pretty well known that he would be a representation of the LGBT plus community. So, you know, being the great American, we could put Lindsey Graham on the $100 bill. When we got that tragic news, you know, he had just returned from Kiev and was reported by somebody, nobody knows who, because he lived by himself, you know, in the middle of the night in his DC residence. You know, some cynical people among us, me, you know, my first impression was, you know, he had a bunch of meth or poppers and a gerbil up his ass, and somebody had to frantically, whoever he hooked up with from Grindr was probably frantically on 911 saying he's quit moving, he's quit breathing. But this would be perfect. We could have Lindsey Graham on the $100 bill, and then on the backside of the $100 bill, you could have in memory of the poor gerbil that innocently gave its life to see the last few minutes Lindsey Graham on this world. We could just keep going. Put them on the bill so we never forget the great defender of Israel and our values, Lindsey Graham. Let's put him on the $100 bill. Give some representation to the alphabet community. I only answer this stuff. I'll stop being, like I say, I'm in one of my I'm so over it moods, so you'll have to excuse me. Hopefully it's at least somewhat funny. I think it is, but I'm kind of jaded like that. But see, on a serious note, the answer here is to quit participating. You know, I've noticed, what I mean by that is they can do all of this they want to. But remember, at some point in time, they need you. They need you. They're not going to fight their wars. They're gyrating for, you know, Britain is knee deep. The UK is knee deep in waging war on Russia. You know, you can sit there and try to use the Ukrainians as front men all you want to, but when you're providing the weapons, the intelligence, and you're doing everything but literally pushing the button, that at some point that game's going to quit playing. And you may mess around and get your war with Russia. And guess who they're going to expect to go fight it? You, white male British men. Don't participate. Don't rally around the flag. Don't participate. As an example of this, here in the U.S., their recruitment numbers are in the toilet, of course. You know, and for years, you know, there were jokes about it on the internet because the recruiting commercials, you know, white men were completely absent. You know, there, I remember this one video that was going around, and it was an actual video put out by the U.S. Army, you know, celebrating some, you know, our American Army today. And it was some woman from California talking about how her lesbian mothers raised her. And boy, this is America today. And I drive around now and I see recruitment billboards, and they're all white guys, you know, find your place in the Marines. And here's some manly looking white guy with a rifle. It's not by accident, because they need you for their wars. They've spent decades, pardon my French, they've spent decades shitting all over you. But see, now they need you. You know, all of this, you read this rage bait crap like this, and you know, this woman heading this committee, you know, this Bridget Phillipson, she's not going to go fight their wars for Israel for them. They need you for that. That's why I say don't participate. They want all this. They're going to do it. They've made it clear that they don't care what you think about it. They don't care what your opinion is in this so-called democracy. Fine, let them have it. Let it burn. Because when they need you, and they will, they need you to keep working. They need you to keep contributing. They need you to keep the economy moving. And most of all, they're going to need you to fight in their stupid wars. Say no, not participating. Oh, if you don't go fight in a war, we'll throw you in jail. Fine. You know, throw me in jail. I will not pull the trigger for Zog. I'm not going to do it. That's the answer. They don't care about your political opinion. They don't care about your vote. They don't care about any of that. They don't care if it makes you mad. They don't care if it upsets you. They don't care if it makes you depressed. They don't care. But they care when they need you. And they are going to need you. These people are not going to go fight their wars. You know, are they going to go round up a bunch of people from Londonistan to go fight Russia? How many people are going to go do? They're not. I wouldn't if I was them either. That's smart on their part. And neither should you. Neither should anybody. This is what they wanted. Let them have it good and hard. Let them do, you just get after it. Let's see how long the edifice can keep standing.
You know, I'd forgotten quite how slimy Lindsey Graham was. I mean, he passed away recently, and there's been bits of him on the television. And what really surprises me is that they've just given the job of senator to his sister. There hasn't been a vote. They haven't said to South Carolina, I think he was a senator for, well, we'll have another election and you can elect who it is you want to replace him. They've just put his sister in the job. It's like an MP here in Britain passed away and they just said, oh, we'll just put your sister in the job. Jacob Rees-Mogg passes away and they just give the job to Annunziata Rees-Mogg without consulting the constituents in any way. And I saw Bibi Netanyahu talking about the sad loss of Lindsey Graham, and he was making this point that even when Bibi Netanyahu said, well, we're going to stop taking aid from America, he apparently got quite angry about that and said, yes, no, I'm going to ask for more aid for you. I'm going to insist that you actually have more aid coming from America. He was so in love with Israel that he would literally do anything whatsoever for them. And I think that's one of the reasons why people disliked him so much. I mean, I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but seeing these images of him, I mean, it sends shivers down my spine, to be honest. He was such a slimy person. There's a picture of him at Disney World with a little mermaid bubble wand just walking around on his own. I mean, what is a 65-year-old single man doing wandering around Disney World with a little mermaid bubble wand in his hand? I mean, serious questions I would have about that and about his suitability to be there. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Lindsey Graham. Let's get back to what's happening over here in Britain with the pound notes and the removing of Winston Churchill. The disclosure has sparked a political row with Alex Burghardt, the shadow chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, accusing ministers of working behind the scenes to remove iconic figures from currency. Well, I don't see they're actually doing it from behind the scenes. I mean, the replacement is going on right in front of our eyes. They're replacing the British population with a non-British population, so why wouldn't they start doing the same with currency? They're doing it with everything else. They don't need to hide it. They're quite open about it. Labour tried to deny any involvement in the cancellation of Winston Churchill and other British heroes. but government officials have been caught red-handed conspiring with the Bank of England to remove them from our banknotes, Mr. Burghardt said. He added, banknotes should feature the greatest Britons, the historic figures that unite our country. They should not be chosen on the basis of Labour's equality laws. And I have to say that that is a good quote there, saying that they shouldn't be chosen on the basis of Labour's equality laws. And that is effectively the root of a lot of these problems that we have in Britain. When the Labour Party came in, they brought in the Equality Act. And every arm of the state had to be seen to be promoting diversity. They had to increase the numbers of so-called disadvantaged groups or historically marginalised groups. And they had to come up with policies of how they were going to increase the numbers of ethnic minorities in every single area. And this is the reason why we have a lot of these problems. This is the reason why we have a police force now that openly discriminates against white people. They openly discriminate against white people. The BBC, when they're asking for people to job opportunities there, the police say that they only want to hear from black and minority ethnics. If you're a white person and you apply, you're not going to get past the vetting stage, effectively. And all of this goes back to these equality laws. So to bring that up here and say, well, look, that this is the basis of it. This is why they want to change Winston Churchill, is because of Labour's equality laws. I thought that was quite a good comment for him to make. Do you think so, Grandpa?
Well, I mean, once again, it's illustrative of the fact that the reality that if you live in the West today, your government hates you. They hate you. You know, I mean, you look at the UK. If I was a British citizen, thank goodness I'm not, though I'm not much ahead being here. Your government hates you. That's the message. It's just clear. You know, it'd be like being married to a cantankerous woman and every day she screamed at you that she hates your guts. At what point in time do you quit going around saying, oh, well, she really loves me. She's just upset right now. Like literally every day she screams that she hates your guts. At some point in time, you would say, well, I believe her. She hates me. Why am I still living with this? With this nag, you know, I mean, it's just these governments in the West collectively, some are more upfront and screechy about it, such as the UK. You know, your governments hate you. You know, so what, you know, why are you going to keep making your wife's car payment? She hates your guts. Why are you going to keep, you know, doing things for when she hates your guts? Why are you going to do anything to support the government? And they hate your guts. Now, I don't know exactly what kind of role the shadow chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, sounds very royal and British. I don't know what kind of role or political power that person has, but obviously it's an official position of some sort. And I do not have words to describe how tiresome it gets to me when you have people within the government, within these political parties, that will come out and make these statements. And it sounds real good. But, you know, I'm always reminded that you're not some rando. You're not me. You're not Sven Longshanks that actually doesn't have any kind of power at all. We can talk about this stuff as well. Good. Mostly it's entertainment for our audience more than anything else. I mean, really, because it doesn't, you know, they're not going to listen to us and then, oh my gosh, we have to roll back this policy. Radio Albion talked about it. Let's just roll it back. They're going to do what they want to do. But, you know, because we're just people. But you have these government officials, and I'm not just focusing on this guy here, but it's an example. You have politicians, you have these political leaders. We've done multiple stories. You'll have MPs, or here in America, congressmen or government officials, and they'll come out for a story like this and condemn it and say how it's outrageous. And it's like, yeah, but you have some power. What the hell are you doing about it? You know, they stand up there and talk like they're us, who, you know, we can talk about it. That's all we can do. We don't have any actual power. They do. They have an official position. Okay, that's all fine. You don't like it. What action are you taking? Are you taking some bureaucratic action to block it, to muck it up in the system, throw a gear in the wrench, something? And again, I don't know what kind of actual, you know, position this is that he could actually, maybe he couldn't even do anything. But we have done story after story, and you'll have like this. I don't know how many, too many to count. They all run together in my head at some point. And inevitably, you'll have some MP or congressman, if you're in America, depending on where the story's at. And the MP will come out and say this exact sort of thing. And it's like, okay, well, you have a position. What are you doing? Are you proposing laws to stop it? Are you refusing to fund it? Are you, opposing, putting these people in these positions, magically get into the position, without some sort of approval? What are you doing? And time again, you'll see these government officials, these politicians, and they act like they're us. Like, oh man, this is so horrible. Someone should do something. Yeah, why the hell don't you do something? People sit there and rile against random podcasters and say, why aren't you doing something? Like, what the hell are we going to do? But these politicians, they're the ones that you need to ask. They'll come out and do an interview here in America. They'll do an interview for someone like Breitbart or Fox News. And, oh, this is just outrageous. Oh, that's well and good. What the hell are you doing? You have political power. You could actually do something, even if it's just bogging it down in committee, arguing against it. Do something. Vote no. Hell, And they time and time again, they do nothing. They do absolutely. They'll just make these statements and act like, "See, I'm just like y'all. I'm so outraged by this, but I'm just like y'all. What are you going to do? Well, you have political office. You have some political power. You hold a position in the government. Instead of whining about it or complaining, I can do that because I can't really do anything else. Why don't you step up and say, this is what I've been doing to try to put a stop to it, but there's only one of me. Then people can rally around and maybe try to put some pressure on some of these other guys, might feel some pressure to, join in your opposition. But time and time again, you'll see political figures. Oh, if there's just something somebody should do, if only the Labour Party wasn't in power, like we haven't had umpteen years of the Tories doing the exact same crap. Same thing with the Team D and Team R crap here in America. This is, if only the Democrats weren't in there. It's like you've got Democrats now complaining about Trump's war for Israel on Iran. And it's like, okay, that's all well and good. That's good. It's fair complaint. But do you actually think that if you had a Democrat president, you wouldn't be doing the exact same thing? You'd be getting the exact same thing. You would just be getting more gay stuff with it. That's the only difference. They would be emphasizing more diversity and gay stuff, but they would still be doing wars for Israel against Iran. You're going to get the exact same thing. And this delusion that, if the other party was, this party wasn't in control and the other party was in control, it would make some sort of, it doesn't. We did these exact same stories when, I wanted to say Cash Patel, when Sunak or whatever his name is, the Indian guy was prime minister. Whichever, y'all have had so many prime ministers at this point, I've lost track except for Liz Truss, my favorite Liz Truss. You've had so many Tory prime ministers. We were doing these exact same stories when the Tories were in charge. Well, now the Labour's in charge. Oh, these Labour policies. Okay, well, we had, decades of Tory rule? And we weren't lacking for stories like this. It's all theater. I'm so over it.
It's actually 7 prime ministers we've had in the last 10 years. And our new prime minister was signed in today, Andy Burnham. So we'll see if he's going to do any better. It's a good point that you make there, Grandpa, bringing up the fact that he's the shadow chancellor, because the fact that he is the shadow chancellor means that he was, or his party was, in office before Labour, which means they had 14 years to do something about the Equality Act. And they did nothing about the Equality Act. In fact, they just promoted the Equality Act and they promoted diversity. And we had more and more immigration into the country and we had more clampdowns on free speech. So they did nothing at all about the Equality Act when they were actually in office. You bring up Liz Truss there as well. And Liz Truss, She's actually seems to be quite good. I know she was only in office for a month and she wanted to make some changes to the budget. And because she made these changes to the budget, she crashed the economy, basically. The mortgages all went up, the pensions went down and people said she had to get out. But since she's been out, she actually seems quite good. That I've seen her in interviews. She's talked about how the people that really control the country are the banks. And it's all beholden to the banks, as if she didn't really sort of understand this before. It does make me, looking at her now, I think she would probably do a better job than anyone else that we've actually got in these political parties. And she broke down in tears the other day talking about Anne Widdecombe. She seems to be going on this sort of touring circuit. She goes to America and talks at CPAC and goes on sort of alternative media podcasts. And she was actually quite good. My opinion of her has actually improved somewhat, as I say, especially when she said about how the banks are the real ones that pull the strings in Britain. Well, ministers dismissed the collusion allegations, insisting that civil servants participated in the consultation through standard procedures. Well, that is collusion, isn't it? I mean, the civil servants work with the ministers. That's what they do. It may be a standard procedure, but it's still collusion. A government spokesman noted that an identical approach was taken during the 2013 banknote review under the previous administration. The Cabinet Office correspondence also proposed that future banknote designs could highlight historically underrepresented groups whose contributions to the UK have been overlooked. Well, how about alcoholics? How about burglars? I don't know. How about the bin men? How about we put the bin men on there? How about we put the rag and bone man on there? I mean, there are all sorts of underrepresented groups. But the whole point of having a banknote is that you put the greatest Britons on there. And by definition, it's only going to be a very, very small number of people that actually fit that definition of the greatest Britons. So these other groups that are underrepresented, they're underrepresented because they're not the greatest Britons. I mean, you might need them. You might need the bin men. You need the bin men to pick the rubbish up. But should you really have one of them on the front of the £20 note showing it off to the world as this is the greatest that Britain has to offer? The same as should you really have somebody who's been in prison on the banknotes? And unfortunately, if you're going to put black and minority ethnics on there, then the likelihood is they might well actually be a felon. I heard the other day one in three black Americans is a felon. I believe a felon means that they've actually been to prison. One in three black Americans have been to prison. So it's got to be a similar number like that over here in Britain. So you're going to have an even smaller group to actually pick from if you're looking for greatest black Britons. I mean, I can't think of any that have made major changes or led the country while we were at war like Winston Churchill did. I'm not very enamoured with Churchill. We've got a series, a six-part series, I think, looking at all the bad things that Winston Churchill did. But he did at least lead the country when we were at war. And we haven't had any black and minority ethnics that led the country at war. As I say, they've only been in the country since the end of the Second World War. So this historically underrepresented groups, they were underrepresented in Britain for a reason. There weren't any of them in Britain. And you can say the same for homosexuals as well. I mean, that was illegal up until the 60s. So you didn't have homosexuals up until the 60s. If you did, they would have been put in prison. So again, are you going to put people that have been imprisoned for sodomy? Maybe we should put them on the banknotes. That would fit in with modern day Britain, wouldn't it, Grandpa? What do you make of this?
Well, speaking of people that should be on the British pound, the British currency, I read a story this morning and concerning one of the leaders of the rape gangs, infamous rape gangs there in Britain, and Islamabad, you know, and Pakistan. They issued a statement and said this guy was like this because he was, you know, he spent so much time in Britain. That's why he's like that. He's not because he's from here. And I did. I laughed, you know, because I thought, you know, how many times have we discussed that, you know, the people that are coming here are not the prime example of these countries. You know, we talked back this probably on our last show, if not the one before. You know, what you're getting is the criminal element. So of course, you know, Pakistan doesn't want the guy back. You know, so yeah, I just thought that was humorous. They got their statement was like, well, it's because, you know, he's spent so much of his life in Britain. That's why he's like that. You know, in other words, because what they're saying without saying it is don't even think about sending him back here. We don't want him. You want all of our criminals? You're going to get all of our criminals. Yeah, you got to love our democracy here. Once again, you know, Britain, Keir Starmer. Yeah, you were talking about Liz Truss, and you know, we joked a lot. I had a lot of fun with Liz Truss, But the bar has gotten lower. You were saying, you know, in hindsight, she wasn't that bad. Well, you know, you just finished with Keir Starmer. I mean, the bar keeps getting lower every time. It keep progressively getting worse. And I saw yesterday where Keir Starmer went over to Ukraine, because of course he did, and probably to collect another bag of cash, because that's what all these people are doing, in my opinion. And he did a big speech about how, you know, Ukraine is standing at the forefront, freedom and democracy. You know, standing beside a guy, by the way, who hasn't had an election in like over 7 years and refuses to have one. You know, he's unelected. You know, standing at the forefront of our democracy. And, you know, you reel that back in closer to home for Britain. You know, where's your democracy? Well, let's see. Ministers dismissed the allegations. Stop there. They dismiss it. So see, the people are complaining about it. People don't like it. What's their reaction? Well, automatically, they just dismiss it. Just dismiss it. Thought it was democracy where they're supposed to, you know, the will of the people plays some part in it. And what did they say? Time and time again, when this kind of stuff comes up, the people don't like it. The people don't want it. Dismiss it. Tough. You just get it. Insisting that civil servants participated in the concert, not the people, government workers. That's your democracy. See, we had a meeting amongst ourselves and we decided. Is that any form of democracy? What say did the people have in it? Civil servants aren't even politicians. They're just government workers. You don't even get to vote them out. We had a meeting amongst ourselves and we all decided this is great. And that we took a vote. We all voted for it. There's your democracy. And people are still pretending. There's actually people out there still pretending that these governments represent them, that you have some form of democracy. I always laugh because you whenever you point this out here in America, you'll have some spurg come up and be like, oh, we don't have democracy. We have representative republic. Hoo-hoo, I'm so smart. How's that working out for you? Well, the founders didn't like democracy. They were smart. They gave us representative republic. Well, that's worked out much better. Obviously, true democracy does have problems, but I would prefer those problems, and at least before they launch a war against Iran, maybe I could get a vote on it. You know, how about that? You know, they're building all the data centers. How about, you know, they have the infrastructure to where all of these questions that come up, the people could sit down and just vote. You know, hook up their laptop. It's vote day. Let's read through this stuff and see what we want to vote for. And then if you vote for it, your taxes, it'll say your taxes are going to go up $200 a year to fund it. If you vote against it, you don't have to fund it. How about that? We could do that. There's no clamoring for any of that, really. All of their talk about democracy and the will of the people. And of course, they don't want any such thing. You know, we don't get to get a say. You don't get a say under these representative republics. You'll get a say. They don't want any kind of actual direct democracy because people would vote against, you know, against all of their crap. They say, oh, democracy only lasts. This is my new response I've decided to have when somebody does the, here in America, does the, we got representative republic much better than democracy. You know, yeah, you know, the saying was, how's it go? Democracy can only last as long as the people figure out they can vote themselves out of the, you know, money out of the public coffers. And I would couple that with representative republics can only last as long as until they realize they can vote them, you know, vote money for Israel and themselves out of the public coffers. You know, the people aren't getting any money, but the politicians sure are. All of them go in. I'm going off on a tangent. I'll wrap it up. But all these politicians go into office, you know, and the job pays like a little over 100 grand a year. And when they get out of office several years later, if they ever leave office, they're always multimillionaires. But hey, it's totally, totally legit. You know, tell me again how democracy can only last because it won't last because the people could, it's horrible. They could vote themselves money out of the public coffers. Versus politicians voting themselves and Israel money out of the public coffers. Yeah, you know, I think we should give something else a chance. I don't care. Let's try actual democracy. Let's use the data centers. Everybody could just have a vote personally on all of these things. You want to vote for a war with Iran? If it passes, this is how much your taxes are going to go up, and you're going to pay for it. The rest of us aren't going to go into debt for it. That sounds like a pretty good system. Let's try that. Hell, it's something. But of course, they're not. These politicians will make statements. They'll whine. They'll complain. But at the end of the day, you're going to get more of the status quo. They pointed out that, just what you said, Sven, in 2013, who was in charge? And they were doing the same stuff. The Tories were in there, same stuff. That's why you're seeing the support for the political parties, both of them, the main parties in Britain, is collapsing now. Well, I wonder why, because everybody's thrown up their hands and said there's no point in participating in this any longer.
Well, we have the technology now to make direct democracy very easy with the internet. I would have thought we could have far more referendums on things than we do. I think it's an interesting point that you raised there, Grandpa, as well. Why don't we just put one of these grooming gang leaders on the pound notes? I mean, that's representative of modern Britain, isn't it? You know, the grooming gangs failed to get to grips with it. 250,000 young girls raped and trafficked by predatory gangs, predominantly made up of Pakistani Muslim men. It's grooming gang scandal. Why don't we put them on the notes? And interesting also that you bring up Pakistan there, because that Pakistan do actually have a point. They don't have grooming gangs in Muslim countries. They're a phenomenon that only occur in the West, in multicultural countries. It's the multiculturalism that gives rise to it. If you go out in Pakistan, the women will all be covered up in burqas, and you won't see an unattended woman anywhere. Every woman will have a brother with her or a husband with her. And so these things don't actually happen. And then you transplant these people from over there, the males from over there, into Britain, where all the women are walking around unattended, practically walking around naked a lot of the time. And you consider these Pakistani men, they're used to seeing women covered up. And it's literally too much for their self-control, essentially. They've never had to develop a system of self-control before because all the women have been covered up in burqas. And that's the situation that we have. So there is some truth to the Pakistani representative saying, well, it was being in Britain that did this to him. Because these things don't actually occur in Pakistan and Afghanistan. These things just don't, you just don't have these grooming gangs. And the other thing is, I mean, the topic of conversation at the moment with Parliament about this grooming gang leader is they're going to change the law, because at the moment they're saying because he came into Britain before 1967, they can't deport him because he's a British citizen. So they need to change the law so that they can deport him. But what they're forgetting is that Pakistan said, no, we're not having him. So it doesn't matter if Britain changes its laws, Pakistan still won't have him. The only way you're going to get Pakistan to have him is if you start sanctioning Pakistan, holding back visas, holding back foreign aid. And of course, they won't do that. They've just signed off hundreds of thousands of pounds in foreign aid to Pakistan. Getting back to our topic today, civil servants suggested exploring themes around social reform, civic action, and education while considering which imagery would connect with communities throughout Britain. And of course, they don't mean the white community there. White people don't have a community. It's only ethnic minorities that have communities in Britain. White people want to set up a community. That's racist. Among the specific recommendations was HMT Empire Windrush, the vessel that transported some of the earliest Caribbean migrants to Britain following the Second World War. Officials described the ship as having become synonymous and symbolic of the Windrush generation as a whole. They argued that featuring it on currency could provide homage to an entire generation and their contributions rather than one specific person. And what do they think white people are going to think when they see that Windrush ship on those notes? They're going to think my country was pretty much 100% white until that ship arrived. Since that ship arrived, we now have stabbings, we have acid attacks, we have terrorism, we have grooming gangs, we have a murder a day, we have all these horrific things happening in the country, and yet we're told we should be celebrating this, we should be celebrating diversity, and that we need to put this ship on the pound note as a homage to an entire generation and their contributions. I mean, it's really just rubbing it in the face of the British people to to do something like that. But these civil servants and the politicians, they're so far removed from the general public that they don't understand the strength of feeling that there is there. And the more they do things like this, the more people become in touch with their ethnic identity. There's a great uprising in nationalist sentiment all across the Western world at the moment. And it's because of multiculturalism. It's because people are being forced to self-identify as part of the ethnic nation, and they're being forced to look out for their interests. So that, you know, there is a positive side to this. And then, of course, the mainstream and the police and the politicians, they'll say, well, what radicalized you? It must be Twitter. It must be the internet. It must be people on there that radicalized you. Well, no, it was the fact that you put the Windrush on the pound notes. It was watching the news. You know, it was all these things, all these changes that we see happening to our country. That's what politicizes a person and makes them want to get involved in activism and trying to put things right. So doing this would just be another encouragement, basically, to people to become more nationalist, I would have thought. Grandpa, do you want to make a comment on that?
Well, to put a finer point, just to put a little finer point on it, it's part of this is, you know, they continue to say, you know, the Great Replacement is a conspiracy theory when it's obviously a part of the agenda. This goes back to your governments hate you, which, again, to put a finer, what I want to put as a finer point here, because, you know, you talk about the problem with multiculturalism, and it's not just multiculturalism. Because in theory, and you can look into, I believe, some in the past, some fairly multicultural societies. I want to say off the top of my head, Singapore, as an example, can function. The difference is the governments in those societies. If you're going to have a multicultural society, the government at times has to be, shall we say, brutally impartial. One of the problems you see, because it's easy just to you know, throw the bucket of paint at the wall and say multiculturalism, and that's true to an extent. But the problem arises, a lot of the problem arises in the fact that, as I said earlier, your government hates you, specifically white Britons. But I mean, you can use it in Germany, France, any of these countries. Our topic is Britain again today, so we use that. The government is actively pitting one side against the other and siding with that side. If the British government, for instance, if you had multicultural Britain and the British government was brutally impartial, and by that I mean, you know, people were punished regardless of this, you know, but they actively are siding. We've covered story after story. This story, we wound up going a little off topic and discussing, you know, you brought up how the British police, you know, they don't, you know, in many of the European countries in the West, you know, if a woman gets raped and reports it to the police and in the description says it's a migrant, she could be charged with a hate crime and they don't bother going and looking for the rapist. Documented as of having happened. That's the government is actively siding one side of the population against another. What I'm trying to say is, in theory, you can have multiculturalism to a certain extent, but for that to have any chance of success, the government has to be brutally impartial, and they're going to enforce the laws equally against everybody, and they have to actively work to tamp down the ethnic strife. You don't have that here. You have the government siding, hating one segment of the population in a multicultural society. So, yeah, of course, you're going to have people becoming more ethno-nationalist aware or whatever, because, you know, it's obvious everyone's against them. If everybody's messing with you and ganging up on you, you know, that's where prison gangs come from. You know, you hear about prison gangs in the American prisons, especially because they're particularly chaotic and brutal. prison gangs arise because if you're not in some sort of group that can band together and defend yourselves, you're not going to survive it. So people join these prison gangs in order for self-preservation. And you see this on a grander scale. People will become more, aware of this, because how can you not? Obviously, the government, and they brought these other people in, they're not impartial. They have sided with one side, and they are hostile to the other. You cannot have a multicultural society with a government functioning like that. That's just throwing gas on the friction that's already going to exist naturally because it's a multicultural society. So the whole experiment is doomed to fail to begin with. And while the government will whine about the failure, they are an active participant in it.
Well, we're no longer equal under the law, are we? You bring up Singapore there. And yes, Singapore is a multicultural country. It's a very small country. It's a city island, effectively, in Malaysia. But it still has social stratification. It still has the white people at the top. Then it has the Chinese and the other more important jobs. And then you have Malays and Indians that do the house cleaning, effectively. And everybody is equal under the law. But you don't have that in Britain, because instead of saying, well, there are some people that aren't really quite cut out to be doing the high-powered jobs, we say, why haven't we got all these black African people running these businesses? They should be heading the board of directors. We'll have to have a diversity quota in order to get more black Africans into the top strata of society. And, of course, that's where these failures come in. They don't have that in Singapore. It's based on merit. Also, it's in Asia, which is different to Europe. But it is a good point that you bring up there, Grandpa. It's not all societies that are multicultural are failures. It's the ones in the West because of the way that it's done. Well, the suggestion follows Transport for London's 2024 decision to rename London Overground routes, including lines honouring the suffragette movement and the Windrush generation. You see, Sadiq Khan has already got in there with changing things. He decided to change all these names to better represent the way that London is now. So that's why you have, instead of having a traditional London name for a London station, you now have a station that's called Windrush generation. The Bank of England has maintained that its decision to abandon historical figures stemmed from public consultation findings showing majority support for nature-themed designs. Well, that was just the cover story, wasn't it? They asked people whether there would be support for putting badgers and squirrels on banknotes, and they said, oh, yes, that would be okay, that would be quite nice, represent British wildlife. And then the Bank of England goes from that to saying, well, they'd be quite happy if we put black people on there instead then, wouldn't they, or gay and lesbian or drag queens on there. So it's a bit of a jump, isn't it, to go from wildlife to putting ethnic minorities on there. In March, the bank ended more than 50 years of tradition by announcing wildlife would replace historic figures on future notes. And of course, this news story is effectively saying, well, that was just a cover story. Really, they want to replace the white people on there with non-white people. And this is just a cover story that they were actually going to put wildlife on there instead. Grandpa, any thoughts?
Well, it's just, you got to like the way that in their dishonesty, they conflate two things. You know, we've been talking about this whole story is this move to replace these traditional figures with other people or things that represent other people. But then they jump in and they change the topic. You know, they're changing the subject to historical figures, wildlife. Wait a minute. We're not talking about wild. Nobody's outraged because they're talking about wildlife, So their disingenuousness is on display. And you just watch. This is the way they do. They just change the subject. When they can't defend their positions, obviously, because they're liars. So they just change the topic. Oh, we had a discussion. It was fine with wildlife. Somebody ought to come back and be like, oh, so are you saying these ethnic minorities, you liken them to animals? Because you're the one now that says, oh, well, everybody said they were fine with wildlife, so why not put these other people on here? Is it that kind of racist? Of course, they don't care. And again, the lie is in your face. They claim that they did these hearings, supposedly, and majority of people supported it. Well, then if the majority of people support it, why is there public outcry about it? You know, if the majority of people are fine with it, nobody would be complaining. And yet the facts, the truth tells us otherwise. It's just more liars just wear you down, you know, because they just lie. That's all they do. And you try, you know, the people are trying to have some kind of normal discussion and point out how this isn't right. This isn't, you know, this shouldn't be done. And you're wasting your time because they're liars. You know, oh, well, we're going to just change the conversation and talk about wildlife. Wait, nobody's talking about wildlife here. You know, that isn't even the subject we're talking about. You know, it'd be like, I don't know, if you were arguing about one policy, and these people just change the subject. It just tells you but they're disingenuous. They're liars, and that's what they do. It's all a waste of time. If you have majority support, why is anyone complaining? You're trying to justify what you're doing. Hey, the majority of people supported this. Then why is there an outcry? Why are people unhappy and upset about it? You know, you've just disproven your own position. Oh, we have majority support. Then who's complaining? You know, because they don't have majority support. They just, well, we're losing here, so we'll start talking about wildlife on the currency. Yeah, it's just, you can insert the "it's also tiresome" meme here.
You know, if they did put wildlife on there, I think there would be some awkward questions, especially if they put the red squirrel on there, because people would be saying, well, what happened to the red squirrel? Well, of course, the red squirrel got replaced by the grey squirrels. And the red squirrel is only found in small pockets, isolated areas now within the United Kingdom. Not sure there even are any in England. They got some in North Wales. They got some in the Isle of Wight. Hardly any red squirrels left because all these grey squirrels came in, and the grey squirrels had lots of diseases with them, and they were more violent, and they outbred the red squirrels. And effectively, they replaced the red squirrels. So I'm not so sure that they would actually want to put wildlife on there, because as I say, there would be awkward questions asked about it. Well, officials also justified the change partly on security grounds, arguing that counterfeiters are becoming increasingly skilled at replicating human faces. Well, surely it's not going to be any difficult to replicate a black face, is it? If they're going to put black people's faces on there, can't be any difficult to replacing white people's faces on there. Or animal faces. So again, they're just sort of deflecting from the issue by saying, oh, we just want to do this because counterfeiters are finding it too easy to replicate Winston Churchill. Last month, the bank launched a public vote on 18 native British species. We admit we have native British species in wildlife then, but just not in mankind. 18 native British species that could appear on the next generation of £5, £10, £20 and £50 notes, with options spanning mammals, birds, amphibians, insects and fish. And now black and minority ethnics and LGBTQ, we can add to that. That poll concluded last week with Governor Andrew Bailey set to make the final selection. So we're waiting to see what they're going to put on our pound notes. Actually, I do hope they put the red squirrel on there, because that would get people asking, well, where are these red squirrels? What happened to them? Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on this today?
Again, how did we jump from talking about foreign people to animals? You know, are they wanting to put LGBT and foreign peoples on the dollar? Are they wanting to put squirrels on the dollar? Which is it? You know, they just made that jump. We just made this complete transition. And, you know, which is it? You know, so and I think the answer at the end of the story is, I guess we don't know. You know, we don't know if you're going to get a fish or if you're going to get some unknown Rastamon with a joint. Are you going to get gay scat porn? I don't know what you're getting. Nobody does. But one thing you do know, you know, the governor, Andrew Bailey, will set to make a final selection. And if you think his final selection will be based on anything that the actual public wants, sweet, sweet summer child, bless your heart. Because I'd be willing to make a bet here.
I think you'd win that bet as well, Grandpa. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.